Welcome to Talking About Organizations, a podcast on organization and management studies, graciously supported by our listeners. This is a supplement to episode 84, where we explored the works of Louis Brandeis, concentrating on the collection of speeches titled Business, a Profession, originally released in 1914 and now available in the public domain. Participating in the episode were Pedro, Michael, Tom, and two special guests, Stephen Cummings and Todd Bridgman. In addition to known classics, we try to include important works who are traditionally overlooked in the management canon, and there are few who exemplify this better than Louis Brandeis. Louis Brandeis, in fact, coined the term scientific management that has since been attributed to Frederick Taylor. But in Brandeis's mind, scientific management had a completely different meaning. First, let me present Louis Brandeis's background in brief. Brandeis graduated at the head of his class in Harvard Law School in 1877. He would soon garner a reputation for being the people's lawyer, for his advocacy for the rights of workers. His most notable contribution came as a legal brief, subsequently known as the Brandeis Brief, submitted in support of the state of Oregon in the Supreme Court case known as Muller v. Oregon in 1908. The case involved the owner of a laundry service, Muller, who required his workers, all female, to work more than 10 hours per day. The legal brief was 113 pages long, but only contained 2 pages of legal arguments. The remainder was a compilation of statements and data from a number of professionals and experts of various fields, medicine, social science, union leaders, economists among them, to argue against the social costs of requiring women to work such hours. The brief is noted for Brandeis's attempts to bridge the practice of law with social science, and would inform his later work as a management consultant. When Brandeis coined the term scientific management, it was about using data and scientific methods to both pursue economic efficiency and the common good, such as justifying better conditions for the worker, and not the pursuit of economic efficiency as understood today. To understand this, one must go back to the turn of the 20th century and understand the state of work at the time. Work was not stable, and in fact, work life looked more like today's gig economy. When there was work to be done, workers would be hired, do the job, and then be released. The stresses this caused was tremendous, as workers would potentially go for periods without work. This also became an issue with life insurance, which was a necessity to ensure families were cared for in the event of a tragic workplace accident. Life insurance required reliable payments. Miss a payment, and the policy was voided and the premiums lost. Maintaining payments without regular work proved impossible for too many, which was unfair. Again, Brandeis's arguments in favor of stable work included the use of data and scientific methods. The general argument was that management could rearrange their work habits and methods towards stable, continuous production, which in turn made the demands for work steadier and led to permanent hires. Greater stability and predictability for workers led to more effective work, less job stress, and greater efficiency. Now, these ideas and others were expressed in a number of speeches Brandeis delivered over the span of a decade, and were subsequently assembled into a book called Business, a Profession, that collectively presented Brandeis's version of scientific management, which today might be seen as progressive. The first in this collection was the title speech, Business, a Profession, delivered at the commencement of Brown University, Rhode Island, in the United States, in 1911. In it, he argues first that a profession is distinguished from other occupations due to 3 factors. First, it is intellectual in character and involves expert knowledge. Second, it is an occupation pursued for others and not only for oneself. And third, financial return is not the accepted measure of success. In our discussion, we contrasted this view of professionalization with Andrew Abbott's framework in the System of Professions, which we covered in episode 67. Brandeis's address included 2 important examples. One was the case of William McIlwain in Boston, who became one of the most successful shoe manufacturers of the time. In the beginning, shoe manufacturing was seasonal, which meant that workers only worked for periods of time. When presented with the demoralizing effect that this irregularity of work wrought on the workers and the associated economic waste, McIlwain changed the production plans, routinized the fulfillment of orders, and at the same time stabilized employment. Over the course of a decade, sales of his shoes grew over 100-fold. He then told a similar story about Filene's department stores in Boston and how business that equated social service to the responsibilities of production would produce great economy. Retailers should be confident that the goods sold were manufactured under conditions which were fair to the workers. Now, Brandeis had a greater vision than what was expressed in these individual cases. A later speech in the collection, titled The Road to Social Efficiency, argued that the shift from workers depending on the sporadic support of charities, moving to a regularized system of work was not only efficient from a business perspective, but was also socially efficient. He called upon companies, unions, and governments to consider the importance of affording citizens with the capacity to be more productive, to educate themselves on nature, and become actively engaged in democracy. He saw this as preventative and showed data that a proper workplace environment would naturally reduce accidents, absences due to sickness, and loss of property. He said, toward the end of the speech, "Consider how great would be the incentive to humanize social and industrial conditions if the cost of inhuman conditions were not only made manifest, but had to be borne from day to day unless the inhuman conditions themselves were removed." In our conversation, we lauded the ideas of professionalizing business as it presented a very positive view on human beings and integrated social justice with industrial practice. This contrasts with the common contemporary practices that in many cases assume workers are lazy or unmotivated. We also contrasted it with the present practices of profit as an end to itself, which later would give way to what we might call financialism, such that shareholder value is the end of good management that we strive for above all else. So what happened? Why did Brandeis's vision fade from view, and how did the current derogatory view of scientific management emerge? In a recent publication, Todd and Stephen uncovered that part of the reason was Brandeis's 1916 appointment to the Supreme Court. While it allowed him an opportunity to promote his ideas and advocate for workers' rights, he was naturally limited to the court cases on the docket and lacked the continued direct engagement he had as a management consultant. But part of it was also that, surprisingly to him, scientific management faced backlash from labor unions over time. As Stephen and Todd would explain, this was because there was a split among scientific management supporters between those concerned with social justice and democracy and those who pushed it as a management tool to make businesses more profitable, essentially putting it in the hands of managers. The history of scientific management would become one-sided. Brandeis would become a mere footnote in that history. But times are changing, and given the events of the 21st century, Brandeis's ideas are being rediscovered, as are similar ideas put forth by other authors we have covered in the podcast, such as Mary Parker Follett in Episode 5, and Charles Clifton Spalding in Episode 56. As with climate change and poor workplace conditions today, these authors lived in an environment of rampant environmental damage and worker exploitation. They not only promoted new ideas about combining economic and social efficiency, they put them into practice and promoted positive change. But it wasn't easy, and it required a fundamental shift in the way business measures itself in terms of economic efficiency alone and not social efficiency. What would it take to spur such a shift? Revitalizing the full story of scientific management might help. As Stephen and Todd explain, the socially responsible organizations that Brandeis consulted with in the early 20th century put modern efforts to shame. If one can set aside the baggage currently associated with Taylorism that views scientific management as a means for dehumanizing the workplace, and look at the true past of what scientific management's original thinkers pursued and put into practice, one may find more workable and attractive solutions to modern workplace problems. That's all for now. Many thanks go to Stephen Cummings and Todd Bridgman for joining us on the episode. We invite you to listen to the full episode, available in two parts on our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com or through your favorite podcast streaming service. We also thank the Management Learning Journal and the European Group for Organizational Studies for their wonderful support and also the support of our wonderful listeners. Thank you for listening and have a great day.